Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 334th episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Sean Wisniewski and Mark Hicks. Tonight, we're visiting with David Duyard, chairmaker, instructor, designer, and a friend of the show, and maybe the hardest working chairmaker I know of, but we'll get into that in a minute. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
How about that? That's a nice intro.
So yeah. Anyway, let's go around the horn and see what's happening in the woodworking. So first off, Woodpeckers has announced a multifunction router bait, which is kind of interesting. It looks like it's real similar to M-Power's router bait. In fact, they vaguely mention that there are others like it on the market and how theirs is a little bit different. And it looks like it's right around the same price. I think Empire's is actually a little bit cheaper, but if you got their full kit, it'd be right around the same price, which does have a couple of things, doesn't as far as some, some support arms for doing mortises. But anyway, I thought it was interesting to bring up and take a look at. I don't know, any thoughts on it from those who have had a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I had seen the Woodpeckers when they put it out, and I am not familiar with the M-Power one, although you putting that in the notes, I do see it's similar. I mean, it's like a phenolic plate. It's got rails that small, like, kind of thing. I'm like, okay. My question watching the Woodpeckers one was, and I don't know routers that well. I know what they do. I don't know the differences between the brands, though. Like, how compatible is that to most? I mean, they show Festool. That's great. Does that work for every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the stores?
I'm not sure it's going to fit every router, but it looks like, from what I was able to ascertain, the most routers.
Yeah, I mean, they've
okay,
got
and
it.
That's it.
They're showing it with a Milwaukee. They're showing it with a Bosch.
Yeah.
And it looks like the bars that feed into the base to, you know, to tie it to the router, they're pretty easy to adjust the width. So as long as you can adjust the height, if that's needed, that's a pretty long list of routers that are compatible. There's probably 20 routers.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. It's an interesting follow up to their recent drill guide unit that they just brought out, using what I'm presuming is a similar rails, to being smart, businessmen, reusable parts and multiple, endeavors. It does look cool. Again, I don't have a full size router in anywhere, in my house or shop. So that's not something I have like a deep, holding to, but, it looks nice. Mm-hmm. The times that I've had to make little jigs to route small channels with my palm router, I know what a pain it is to be accurate at that kind of stuff. And so any of these things that do that kind of thing. Mm. But Mark, I think you mentioned just the look of it. It's not the sexiest thing that you could have in your shop. That's for sure.
No, it's not. It does look a little bit better than the M-Power one. That looks like they're big company. What's interesting is one of the last, I guess, chair making joints I was going to tackle is into back post. And I've been thinking about it. I kind of been looking at the M-Power bait, found some with that. So I wasn't actually going to go. It's more going to be like a technique. And the next time I had to do that, I was either going to buy the M-Power. Well, I was going to buy the M-Power and see how that worked out. But now it looks like I have a choice to make.
Oh, that's good. Choice is good.
Choice is good. So we'll see how that works out. But I thought it was interesting. But like I said, I think they're wanting $220 on the introductory offer. I don't think it's shipping until June or July.
Is it not?
Yeah, the M-Power
introductory ends March.
Yeah.
And is the M-Power currently on the market?
Yeah, it's currently. It's been on the market for a few years now.
Okay.
And it's been hyped by a bunch of people. Probably the best router base out there to see how it all stacks up. But if you got the Empower master kit with all the accessories.
Okay. And that's it. I mean, all the you know, yeah. Obviously the base unit does something that's like an 8x6 rectangle area. Yeah. You can do simple things.
Yeah, what's nice about both of these is once you put your router on there and you get it close to a line, they both have, looks like, very good micro capabilities. They dial.
And that's where Diami should be on the episode, because he would say, I'd get three of them for three of my routers and keep them set up that way and move on from there.
Exactly. We'll have I'm sure he'll listen to this and have a comment.
I'm sure he will.
Send emails to Sean W. at...
No, hopefully, like we've been saying, his work will slow down and he'll actually be able to join us. And I'm sure he'll have a whole long list of gripes. So, anyway. All right. Remember 3 months ago when you said this? Yes, I can see it.
No, I don't. Flat answer. Nope.
Wrong answer. But anyway, well, let's move on. Just a quick mention. General, the Canadian company, and where's that music coming from?
I got no music, man. Your wife?
Oh, that must be me.
It's probably coming from the their webpage.
Because it is. I'm just trying to see where it was coming from.
It's the video. It's the promotional video.
I'm going to shut that down. Anyway,
for those of you shopping at work, know that they're... website will play a video.
Exactly. So be cognizant of that.
Of course, we're all working from home, so.
Yes, but anyway, so General Tools has a new table saw out, and it's bringing some features on the commercial table saws, kind of down to, I guess, the pro consumer category, if you want to say, because this table saw in cheap, I think, is about $4,000. But it does have a automatic electronic adjustment of the blade height tilt, as well as the fence. So you basically just hit a keypad and the fence will move to whatever dimension you plug into it. So it's kind of interesting, kind of neat.
That is interesting. Yeah. How much do you, in a case like that, how much do you trust that kind of electronic movement in say setting a bevel on your table saw, does that alleviate the little magnetic gauges, or whatever, where you go, I need a 42 degree, angle here. I need to cut this precise bevel, and I see it's like, in place of the normal handle, screw handles or whatever, on what I envisioning my dad's table saw, they've got a box there, so it's like there's a motor on an arm that's spinning a thing that it's just different. That would be totally weird for me to like stand up in my saw and go 32 degrees at 16 inches off and it just goes zzz,
yep,
and now I just run my piece through.
Yep.
I don't know what it would take for me to trust that flat out and just go, yep, I know that's right, and I'm just going to put the piece into the work and go.
I don't think you would trust it at first, but I think you would probably learn to trust it.
Right.
If it worked.
Yeah.
If it was accurate, yeah. And then it's like, how accurate? Is it accurate? Because I read a, an inch to fraction meter. Like, if you tell me I know basic equivalence, but, 0.875 is 7/8 of an inch, but how is it displaying it and how accurate truly is it? People get crazy about thousands of an inch of drift on the fence as it is.
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't worry about that stuff.
There's one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not worth it. It's too much trouble. I think this would be handy for somebody with maybe a disability, grip issues, like not having to crank.
Yeah.
Really, the height's not a lot of cranking, but it's, it takes some effort.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some customers that could benefit from something like this.
I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But, as far as, and in a production shop, I don't see it. I don't understand where the value is, something like that.
Yeah, one thing they showed in their promotional video, which plays automatically, mentioned before, anyway, one of the things that they showed is being able to say, okay, I want to cut a bunch of 4-inch parts and then you switch back and you just hit a button and now it's cutting 6-inch parts. Then you can switch back to cutting 4-inch parts. So it just makes it quicker to do those
things. So you can repeat your setups.
Yeah.
If you mess up, it has a last channel button.
Right.
Well, but even then, like if you set it to 4 inches and then you cut 5 other different widths and you find out you need another 4-inch part,
right?
They have to be exactly the same.
Right.
You can duplicate your setup, and that I can see that. That's always a thing. Like we were batching out parts, we would never change a stop until we knew for sure we were done, because you can't go back. You can never get it exactly the same.
Right.
You get really close.
And
if it was
a case where it was precise as can be, Mark, I mean, I think in your job, if you go, okay, every bench slab I need to be 15¾ inches, and you just go boom, rip, and all you do is push that button to that setting and go yes. But I don't know what kind of memory it has, you know, that kind of stuff. But if it, how deep it goes or how long it lasts, that kind of, you know. But still, I mean, it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
You got to buy a whole 3-horsepower saw, you know, to get it.
Yep.
You know, that being said, are there aftermarket things that already do this? Are there offerings from anybody that says, hey, you know, DRO your table saw controls?
Not that I know of. I mean, you know, woodpeckers had that little gadget that they had for some saws, but that was just mechanical stops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably get something like a fence, but not height adjustment or angle adjustment, because you'd have to actually put a motor on those spindles, on those shafts to replace the cranks.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's interesting is if you do watch their promotional video, which I did, I hate to be the safety police here, but they did show this guy cross-cutting with a miter gauge in the fence as a stop.
It's like, no.
I don't normally complain, but he just kept doing it.
Yeah. You can hear the binding happening in that cut, like immediately.
I was like, okay, maybe there's something there that I'm not seeing, but it didn't look kosher from what I saw.
Benefit of the doubt, they're not going to do anything dangerous.
Right? Yeah, you would think not. But anyway, but moving along, Daniela Rose Bird has introduced a book called Hand Carved Bowl, and that is out for pre-order. And if you're familiar with her work, it is absolutely masterful. I have a feeling this stick. So I think it's $35. So for the pre-order. So I believe it's out in March. I believe it will come out where the delivery address is or the published date.
I was thinking April.
I think it's April. I think it's going to start shipping at the end of March.
Yeah, published date due April 13th.
Okay, April 13th.
April 13th, 2021.
Sorry. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, and of note is she might be one of our upcoming guests. I'm not saying anything, but she might be.
Might be. Always look forward to a conversation.
Yeah. So yeah, she'll be on, and that's why I was thinking the end of March, because that's when she will actually be on our show, which probably will not. That show probably will come out around the 1st of April or that first week of April. So anyway, so that'd be great. But yeah, if you want to jump on the bandwagon, then head on over to her site, DanielleRoseBird.com.
It looks like it's going to be a really pretty book, and Maddie Hinckley did the illustrations. I don't know what they look like, but I have some work by her.
Mm-hmm.
She put out a little self-published booklet, and it's a great little piece of art. So I'm looking forward to seeing those as well.
Yep, I think Pete Galbert did the foreword for it. So
he did. Yeah.
Yep.
Very nice. Very nice. I know. I know they've hit it off pretty good, because I think it's one of the Fine Woodworking Lives. I think he walked away with like 3 or 4 pieces that she brought to the show.
Wow.
Something like that. Anyway, but moving right along, a new podcast is back. Well, it's not a new podcast. It's an old podcast.
A new one is back.
Yeah, a new one is back. No.
Nice.
The Woodworkers Podcast. So they kind of took a hiatus for about, I want to say somewhere about 9 months or so. So they're back. I noticed it popped up in my feed a couple of days ago. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but if you're familiar with that, it features Ben, Ramon, and some English guy. So, but
nice.
Yes. So anyway, they're all good friends of the show, and I've been on. I think Ramon was on about 4 or 5 months ago. So.
Mm-hmm.
So good guys. Real good.
Competition is good too.
Yeah. Oh, their podcast is great. So yeah, give that a listen. The Woodworkers Podcast.
Heck yeah.
So with that, what's in the shop, Mark?
7 workbenches.
I've been watching your posts. Yes. Yes.
They, it looks like they are, it's pretty piling cool. up. Yeah. Yeah. They're, I'm surprised it's like I can move around. And I mean, there really are. There are no extra parts, with the exception of the planing stops. There are no more parts to make, you know, as far as physical space. So there's a few things to do on some of the parts, but yeah. Are any of you familiar with the planning fallacy?
No. It takes twice as long and costs twice as much or something like that?
Yes, that is the tendency for the human woodworker, especially, to underestimate the amount of time it's going to take to do a thing. And I have been living the planning fallacy for the last 2 weeks. It's just, I'm amazed at how much there is to do. And I've done it, you know, 80 times now. And I just it's so much more involved. It's way more than I was thinking. So that's been fun, but they're getting close. So my students are being patient, and they're all excited to get started, and I'm excited to ship. So yeah, should be a lot of fun once these things finally hit the shipping dock. It's time to start making videos.
Now, do you have someone that comes and picks those up, or do you take them yourself?
No, I'll take all. I'm shipping 6 of them, and then one of them stays here. It's for a customer, so I'll build it and video the build as I do it. But I'll take all 6 on a trailer up to the freight depot and drop them all off at once. So they can't. My driveway is too steep and curvy, and my little walk behind forklift won't make it back up the hill if I. And I don't know that it would stop if I went down the hill with it. So it would be a disaster, especially with the ice on the drive right now.
Oh, okay. I am jealous that you have a forklift, though.
Winter is not.
Yeah, it's worth every penny. So I found out I had a broken back, and the forklift was the first thing I bought. So, and it's been one of the best purchases I've ever made. So I'm very happy.
That is. So, Sean, what's going on?
Not much as far as making anything, but I did find out that my dad is a listener, so I had a chuckle because I thought it was kind of like Tom's mom, that my dad calls me and goes, hey, I listen to your show, and blah, blah, blah. So, everybody, hi, Sean's dad. How you doing?
Hi, Sean's dad.
In other not necessarily woodworking-related news, but podcast-related news, Diami reached out to me the other day, and like he's not busy enough. He's making some half cross country trip with Boy Scouts and said, oh, hey, we plan to leave on whatever day and be to Toledo by the night. Yeah, any chance I could meet up at a socially distanced safe way? I'm like, sure.
Sure.
We'll figure that out. So I might see Diami this month.
Oh, fantastic.
How about that? Yeah. Coming his way. I think he said he's going to maybe Minnesota. Why would you go from Long Island to Minnesota? There's plenty of woods and whatever. I don't know what they're going for, but, he might be coming through my town.
There is a like a winter kite festival in Minnesota, like in February.
Really?
They go out on a frozen lake, and it's like thousands and thousands of kites.
Kites?
Huh. Yes, it sounds strange, but it's one of those things I hope to do when the world gets back to normal.
Okay.
It just looks like a ton of fun. It's freezing cold, but it looks like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, good. No, we'll take pictures.
So really.
And post.
Oh yeah, I hope to. And really, you know, it's funny. This is kind of a way back, but Kyle, you're familiar with it. So Diami has a book of mine that got signed by the author at Fine Woodworking Live 2 years ago, and so he included that. He goes, maybe I can give that to you if I see you, save shipping or whatever. But like, yes, that'll be good. So
exactly. Well, fantastic.
That'd be funny. So, Kyle, how about you? More interesting than my not doing anything. What do you got going on?
Oh, well, I just finished up my video and posted it on kind of a general overview of my new arm bow drilling guide, kind of a overview of the prototype or the pre-production. So I got that posted and finished up. I actually wrote a script this time, and it came...
Not to be a critic, but I could tell you had a script.
Well, yeah, I still got to work that out, you know.
That's fine.
But when I was doing freeform, I would babble on for this is like 6 minutes, and I think it touches all the, not quite the stylistic choice, but, you know, I think you start getting better.
I would assume so. Yeah. No, it looked good, I thought, because, I mean, I saw the image of that, and we talked about it last episode, I think.
Yeah.
But to, you know, your video is well produced. What kind of response are you getting from the people that, I mean, may be interested in it? I mean, I look at it from not a chair maker's perspective.
Yeah. No, I've got a lot of good interest in it. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good, a lot of good comments. And, you know, I sent out the two pre-production units I have for testing some actual chair makers. And, David has graciously volunteered, to be one of those actual chair makers.
Looking forward to it.
To do that. And, then, then, of course, Craig Becker has been a guest. Silent Mill on Instagram has also tested out for you. So I got those out in the mail to those gentlemen to give me some feedback. I think I got it pretty much nailed down, but you never can be sure that, hey, I got the dimensions right. Maybe I'm building this thing too long. Maybe it'd be shorter. That's really the only thing I think could be a factor. But, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, of the two pre-production units, they were almost the same except for the length. And I sent the shorter one to David and the longer one to Craig, so we'll get some feedback. Hopefully one says this one's too short, another one says it's too long, so I might have to have them switch back around, or maybe hit the Goldilocks dimension in between, but anyway.
Yeah, you know, at some point in time, you're going to have to organize a shop wall and produce a video that has all of your jigs hanging, like chair makers have chair jigs, all of your little drilling jigs just neatly hanging at some askew angle, and just
funny you mention that.
Oh no!
It's because I was looking at different storage options, and I have an idea about how to store these jigs on a wall, and so I'm thinking about mocking something up. It's nothing I would sell. I would say, here's a plan, or cut it out yourself. But something you could easily do out of a plywood and some Forstner. So we'll see what comes of that. So, but yeah, I have gotten some pictures from some customers who have done some very elaborate storage technique for my jigs. That's always fun to see. I think I'm stealing an idea or two from. So. But yeah, like I said, so watch the video for information, not for entertainment.
Well, now, Kyle, have your jigs gotten better since you started making them?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, your videos will get better too. Don't worry.
There you go. Don't be a harsh critic of yourself.
Yeah. I mean, the first ones I made are absolutely excellent. It's just these latter ones are just so much more so.
Yeah. There you go.
So there you go. But, and then besides that, I'm, steaming some bows for, loomback chairs. This is some more, foray and kiln dried steam bending. So we'll see how that goes. The first one I did, I kind of like did everything you shouldn't do just to see how it would work out. And it worked out probably like I expected. It broke right in the middle of the bow. So anyway, so now we're doing some other things, but you know, the first one I did, I just steamed it extra long and just to see how it would perform, and it did not perform well. But I need plenty of spare parts for experimenting with my jig, so that was not a big deal. The next one I've had soaking for over a week. I'm going to do this tomorrow. It's a back strap on
a strap.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes.
Kiln dried.
Yeah, it's kiln dried wood, and it's trying to do one of those bloom backs, and I'm not sure if it'll ever make it. It's a pretty aggressive curve.
It's a double bend too, right?
Yeah. So
yeah. What's your back? Is it just strip of spring steel or?
Yeah.
What do you use for that? Okay.
Yeah. And so we'll see how that performs. And if that does not perform well, then I'm going to just have to buy some wood and have them shipped over, either green wood or maybe buy a back already bent. I don't know what would be cheaper at this point.
Get some of that Lost Art Press bendy wood stuff.
I thought about that, but that stuff's like $100 or so for one.
You're not charging for your time.
No, I'm not charging for my time. But you know, I think I can get a back that's already bent for like 70.
Yeah, and you know some chair makers that might be able to.
I was gonna say I'm ready to split open a new oak log. You know, it's 20 inch diameter. I'm sure there's a few links in there.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So and that won't be the first time I bought some wood from David. So
yeah,
probably not the last.
I would think you need a strap on that. Even
even
when I'm doing them with greenwood, I'm using a strap on them so it doesn't split, you know. And you just got to get it wedged through the ends and put it in compression, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. Like I said, I hope to do that tomorrow, so stay tuned. Well, by the time this posts, you will already see my success or failure. So anyway, but let's see. Oh, David, good question for you when you're doing that. So you're using even greenwood, you're using a strap?
Yeah.
How long do you leave the strap on after you...
Oh, once it's in the form, the strap can come off.
Okay.
Yeah. I just keep it on for the bending.
Okay.
You know? So it's minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes,
okay.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, because I was thinking, I'll leave it on there for about an hour or so I get off. But last time I did that...
That'd be fine. If you're only doing a couple, that's all.
Yeah.
You're fine. But if I've got them lined up, I'm just using two forms and going one to the other and using the same strap a lot of times.
And you just transfer to a drying form at that point, or?
Yeah. Well, something like that needs to go into a drying form. But some of just a regular bows, a regular bow back, or some of the bows on a sack back, I just tie them off with string and hang them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're fine. You know, and a lot of times when they dry, they actually shrink in, and the string that's holding them together is just drooping. It's really, really pretty amazing. They actually shrink tighter than what they, what's going on.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. But I find it's just a strap will guarantee that you're going to, you know, keep that wood in compression and keep it going good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what else do you have working on in the shop, David?
I've been busy.
No kidding. Like I said, the hardest working chair maker I know.
Well, it kind of started last year when we canceled all the classes, and it was like, I was kind of twiddling my thumbs. And then I think the pandemic is saying people want to fix up their houses, you know, and stuff. So I've got a couple of Brian Boggs style Brea armchairs and cherry that be working on. They should be finished up next week. I've got another set of ladder backs of my own design and a dining table to go with them. They're due in March.
So how many ladder backs is that?
Just four.
Just four. Okay.
Yep. They'll be in walnut and all side chairs, no armchairs. So that'd be pretty nice. To go with a pecan tabletop.
Ah, yep. Yes.
So guy had it shipped from Texas and brought the wood over and said, "Here's my tabletop. Make a base for it."
Well, it's sometimes pretty wood. It's
gorgeous. It's really nice orange red color to it. And
sometimes it's really not pretty. The easiest to work.
It's all milled. It's all like
it is okay.
Flat and okay. Everything. Yeah, it's a live edge.
Okay. Okay.
You know, 24 inches wide.
Yeah.
It's a big, big tree. And, but it's really, really, really pretty, pretty wood, and it's milled flat. So all I have to really do is do a final sand on it and throw it on a base.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty nice.
Yeah.
That is nice.
You know, and I've got, I try not to do furniture, but, it keeps coming in. So I've got a coffee table, a bed, and a vanity, you know, and these are all, you know, customers I've built other stuff for, and they say, "Well, you do this for me," and it's like, okay, can't turn them down, you know. And got a couple Welsh style stick chairs in the works. Be ash.
Wow. Have you built any Welsh stick chairs?
I've done some of the staked chairs. You know, they're like in Chris's, you know, anarchist design book, you know, and they're fun. But I've never built a so-called Welsh stick chair. You know, and so it'll be interesting. So one's a Welsh guy, and the other one has an old Cushman chair that they wanted something like that. So I've got them laid out and designed. I haven't started cutting out parts for them yet, but they'll come out soon.
Cool.
So you know, I still got a few repairs going on in the shop. I'm repairing a couple of original Wegmans, the chair, recaning it. So that's been nice to just work with some original Wegmans. Boy, they're beautiful.
Wow. And,
you know, and that's been fun. So yeah, so I've had a good variety of repairs and new stuff coming in, some perch stools. I'm teaching a perch stool class in Bob Van Dyke coming up. So I got to get ready for that and build a few ahead of time. And, you know, using essentially it's Pete Galbert's design. I modified it a bit to give it a little bit of a bigger seat, but it's essentially the same chair. And
cool.
You know, so it's been busy.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now you taught a class there at Connecticut Valley.
Yeah, we taught a sackback class there last summer.
Yeah.
And it was really nice. Bob's got a beautiful place, you know, it's a big wide open space, and we were actually able to work outside, brought all the benches and the shave horses outside, worked outside for part of it. And, you know, and everybody walked away with a finished sackback after 6 days. So and we started cool. from splitting log. So these guys did a great job.
Yeah. And, it's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So did all the steam bending and, you know, all worked out real well.
Ah, to live in the land of Greenwood. So.
Yes, I know. You know, it's somebody was asking me, you know, where did I get all my stuff? And it's like, well, I got this guy, he's 20 minutes. And I got this guy, well, he's maybe 35 minutes. I got this guy, he's an hour, you know.
Yeah.
And you kind of have your pick, and I can go in and say, this is what I'm looking for. And it's like when they find a tree trunk for me, they say, I got it. And let's go, let's mill it up.
Wow.
You know, like, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I got a log yard. It's only 20 minutes away. I can go pick out the white oak log I want, and they just load it onto a trailer, and I drive it home.
Nice.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So
it's wonderful living where I live.
Yes. No kidding. Well,
yeah.
Well, so I think you were on episode 269, if it serves me right. So, so folks that want to get a expanded background of David and how things came to be, I'd recommend you go listen to that. But can you give us a little, I guess the nickel tour, so to speak, how you became a chair maker and an instructor?
Yeah, I actually started building furniture, you know, first, I apprenticed for a guy in New York for a couple of years and needed to make money and did corporate stuff, and then went back, had a full-time shop out in California for a while, and studied you know, out in San Marcos, and then got a full-time job and came back and finally just, you know, and always selling stuff on the side, so it was always a side gig for me.
Yeah.
And then as I was looking to set back up again, you know, it's like I don't want to be lifting like sheets of plywood all the time, and I don't want to be building kitchens and competing on built-ins. I don't want to be, you know, working in spray booths. And I slowly evolved to be more green woodworking and chairs. And chairs were, I think it's because it's like, you know, they're like one of the most intimate pieces of furniture that you have in a house, right? So you have this connection with people through chairs that you don't with a lot of other furniture. And then they're, you know, generally fairly complex to build. So, you know, because nothing's at a right angle. So, you know, your reference points are all different. So it was between the challenge and the customer interaction, I think, kind of drove me to chairs. And I built my first chairs with Ian Kirby when I studied out in San Marcos, mostly mission style. Mm-hmm. You know, not anything like a Windsor or a Ladderback that I build today. And but it kind of got me thinking. And then I took some classes with Mike Dunbar when I moved back east, right around 2000, 99, 2000, something like that. I moved back east. And kind of fell in love with Windsor chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Took a few classes with Mike and started selling them. And, you know, people would sit in them and they go, wow, this is a great chair. And all of a sudden I'm selling sets of chairs and I'm building them on the side. And it came to a point where I was having some problems with some joinery. And, you know, I wasn't doing any of the green woodworking stuff that I do today.
Right.
And I was having some joints fail.
Mm-hmm.
And after having to replace a few chairs for customers, I better figure out what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to get into the, you know, to the guys that were teaching at the time, Curtis or Pete Galbert or, you know, George Sawyer or, you know, Greg or anybody. They're all booked, right? They're booked for a year. They issue their classes and they're booked for a year, and they're all fabulous guys. And So I started calling around, and I was traveling. My daughter's was living out in Indiana. I kind of swung down through Virginia to meet Jeff Lefkowitz. And
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, you heard about that guy. And he goes, yeah, I'm booked. He goes, and I'm not building Windsors anyways. I'm building these other chairs, you know. But he took the time and we sat down and we talked for a long time and talked chairs and design and stuff and but really green woodworking. And he goes, I had the same problem. And so I went there and I took a class with Jeff. And you know, I kind of walked out of there with a big light bulb over the head that says, wow, I know everything that's going on where my failures and joints were. And since then, I haven't had a joint failure. So I think I want to say that's 6 years ago now, 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've made, you know, dozens and dozens of chairs.
Yeah.
And so you know, without any issue. Yeah.
So what was the issue?
I think it's a combination of everything. It's you know, not paying attention to grain orientation, not paying attention to moisture content, uh-huh. not paying attention to super tight joints, right. not really worrying about glue lines, uh-huh. You know, but definitely the grain orientation and the moisture content were a big thing.
Yeah.
Because I was just taking kiln dried stuff and, you know, or even some green stuff and just turning it, okay, joints tight, let's put it together, glue it together and go. And all of a sudden, you know, your joint's failing and it's loose, you know, it's, you're not super drying and stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. Because, yeah, I work primarily, of course, in kiln dried wood. But, yeah, even super dry and kiln dried wood, I've noticed you get that stuff to shrink down a couple.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just enough to get that get that super tight fit when it equalizes. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've gotten my old lazy self and, like, kind of, like, dry fitted a chair the night before and go, I'll take it apart in the morning and glue it up. It's like, that's not happening. It's not coming apart, period.
Yeah, yeah. This chair is so green, it doesn't have any glue in it, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. I see people doing that with the dovetail tenon joint on their Roubaix workbenches. Yeah. And whenever I see that, I send them a message, take that thing apart before it tonight or you will be regretting it in the morning.
Yeah. It's amazing just how same overnight thing. That changes, you know, mm-hmm. It's just amazing, you know, and it's wonderful because the chairs just last, you know, cause I always thought ladder backs were the, you know, they just wouldn't hold up to anything, you know, mm-hmm. and they do. They're you can abuse the hell out of them and they'll stay together if you build the joints right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, so tell us a little bit about the situation with your in-person classes during the pandemic. I assume you're like everyone, everything had to be canceled and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. We canceled everything. Mm-hmm. If I knew that the guys were local where they're not, you know, they're not staying in hotels, they're not eating out in restaurants, they're not going out at all, you know, then mm-hmm. I would say, okay, let's do it, you know, and my shop's not that big and I don't want that many people anyway. So I'm having a class with 2 to 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, despite during the summer, you know, I had 2 classes, but open the doors wide up, fans blowing all the air out, everybody wears a mask 24/7, mm-hmm. you know, and it worked out great. And, good. But that's kind of my, like, but otherwise I canceled all the other classes and just didn't do any, you know, if they were local, I'm hoping to, or I'm looking to put out by the time this podcast airs, I guess the class list for 2021 will come in, but it's all backloaded into the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mix of, you know, the ladder backs, the Brian Box style ladder backs, my own ladder backs and Windsor chairs. You know, so I think it's a good mix, you know, because mm-hmm. they're very, very different chairs to build.
Yeah. Now, how's your commission work been during the pandemic? So this looks like it's been pretty good from what's on your bench, but
yeah. Yeah. It's been pretty good. Like I said, all of a sudden it's been, people are, you know, especially up in this area, you know, I'm halfway between Boston and New York. And mm-hmm. so everybody's moving out of the cities into the country and they're going, okay, well, I don't want IKEA in my new home in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I want something that's going to be more appropriate for the style, for the area, for whatever. And so I've been doing an awful lot of local chairs, you know, settees, two and three person settees, you know, sets of chairs, individual chairs, a lot of stools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's been good, you know, and
right.
You know, one of my reluctance of putting out more classes is, you know, getting so busy that you know, I'm up to a 6 month lead time or something. I think
yeah.
right now I'm a good solid 3 months, three months plus.
Yeah.
Out right now.
Well, that's a good problem to have. Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Keeps you busy and keeps you honest.
Well, and especially if you've got people willing to wait as well. I mean, that's a good base to work with.
Yeah, I said, you know, this the people I'm interacting with want something that's solid and is going to last, and they want that connection to an artisan, and you know, they want it. They have nice homes, and they want something that's going to be in there and is going to last and going to look good, and so they're willing to wait, and they realize that it's being made for them. You know, it's not mm-hmm. something that's going to be, yeah, I've got one in the back room here. Let me sell it to you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right.
You know, yeah. And it's
that's awesome.
Yeah, and a lot of people I talk to are the same thing. They're seeing that the pandemic has changed people's, you know, how they're looking at how they live.
Right.
You know, from mm-hmm. home offices and more comfortable furniture. They want it to look nice. They're spending time at home. So, you know, hey, I'm only here on a Saturday or a Sunday. I can get away with some cheap furniture. And now it's like, well, I'm in the house every day and this thing is really bugging me.
mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, that is cool. So let's say one of our listeners says, okay, I'm due to get my second vaccination in late March, early April, and I'm looking at your classes. So what's it like to take a class up there? You know, what's the class size, shop surroundings? I think you mentioned to limit it to about three students.
Yeah. I limit it to three for the main reason when I was taking classes, and you're in this class and there's, you know, a dozen people or more in there, you mm-hmm. know, you just don't get the teaching student interaction. And I decided if I'm going to do it, I'm going to keep it so that I have good interaction because I right. want people to be able to walk away with learning something, and I want them to be able to walk away with a chair that they can be proud of versus something that's slapped together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I keep the classes to a max of three.
Okay.
And I've had five in my shop, but it's too much.
Yeah.
And I did that mm-hmm. once, and it was like never again. And so if I can get two to three in a class at a time, I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and once the warmer weather comes up, just open up the shop and get yeah. lots of air anyway. So I think we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, once April comes, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm in the hills, what's called the Litchfield Hills, you know, the, you know, foothills of the Berkshires and the Appalachians as it runs up, you know, north, south. So it's a really pretty quiet area, but I'm only 2 hours out of Manhattan. So I've got a trophy trout stream 100 yards from the house. I've got a yeah. ski area a mile and a half away.
Yeah. You just posted about that. That is just,
yeah. Yeah, you know, so it's like, you know, it's my wife's a trainer, so she gets out and is out of the house pretty early, and so
yeah.
I get up and do some work, and the lift's open at 9, and
yeah.
I'm there at 9, you know, I can get an hour and a half in by 10, and I'm, you know, and I'm still getting a full day in, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm, you know, so jealous.
Getting first yeah. tracks, it's pretty nice. So I try to get there 3 or 4 days a week, and with all the snow we've been having, it's been really pretty nice.
I'm very yeah. jealous.
Yeah.
So are you a big fly fisherman too?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you make your own rods?
No.
Okay.
I've repaired some bamboo rods for
okay.
friends, but I'm not, you know, there's only, I learned early in life, there's only so many rabbit holes you can go down.
mm-hmm.
You know, and after going down a bunch of them all at the same time and you get so confused in the tunnel mix, it's just like, you wonder if you're ever going to come up again. So I try to limit it.
Now, one question that, being me living in Texas and having to travel these classes, I always have a question for is, can you help students, like if they come, travel far away, say they're going to be flying in or something of that nature, that about actually shipping their chair back to their home?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah. I've done that a bunch.
Okay.
And, you know, most of the chairs will fit in a box that UPS will ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a, you know, a few miles down the road, there's a UPS store and they'll package it for you and ship
okay.
as well. Or, you know, we can create it you know, if it's something really big, but yeah, it's not a problem shipping.
Okay. Fantastic. No. Well, now I want to move on about, I guess you've done a couple of shows, at least I've seen you post, but you've also posted a lot about the Mystic Seaport Museum. So can you go on a little bit about what you've been doing during the pandemic as far as, you know, attending some of these shows? I assume they're all socially distant and
most of the local shows are all been canceled. The little arts fairs that are stuff that they've all been canceled. And I try to support a couple of the local communities here, and they're actually pretty good shows for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm generally the only woodworker that's there, but you know, I said it's our area is full of second homes out of New York and Boston, so you know, people are looking for that. But there's two museums I like supporting, and one is the Hancock Shaker Museum up in Pittsfield, Mass. And it's maybe an hour and 15 minutes away from here, so it's pretty close. You know, and they have probably the largest, you know, old Shaker village there, and they keep it as a working village. So there's farm animals and pigs and cows and sheep, and they're, you know, and it's a big teaching thing, and they do a fall festival every year.
And
I'll do that. And they spread everybody out, you know, this year they spread everybody out. So we were all over the place, but it's nice to be able to support them and their stuff. And obviously that place wasn't a huge chair making place, although they did make some there. Mount Lebanon just over the hill was, but they have a full chair shop. They have, you know, the barn where they used to pump water in, and everything was mechanized, and they had water powered lathes and water powered saws, and all that stuff was there. So it's a pretty neat place.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mystic Seaport Museum is a fabulous
question about
place.
Hancock Shaker Village. So what are you displaying there? Assume that you're Shaker type chairs. You're not bringing.
Yeah. Well surprisingly, the Shakers built Windsor style chairs.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
A lot of their early chairs were Windsor chairs. And so if you go back in the history, you know, they look a lot more like a staked chair, but it's Windsor. It's got the solid seat and the legs coming up through and a separate upper carriage. And so they actually made Windsor chairs, and they actually made they had a swivel mechanism for a Windsor chair that was pretty interesting that they had done back, you know, this early Shaker time, you know, 1840s, 1830s kind of things, you know. So they do. And
so the seat, you know, would swivel?
Yeah.
Wow. That's, yeah, I've seen that modern, but yeah, I didn't realize it went back that far.
They were building chairs a long time. You know, I think they started building them for themselves and then moved on, but they had one Windsor chair they named after one of the elders, and it was pretty important, you know, but, you know, everybody knows them for their kind of iconic, very straight back, you know. I'm looking at one. I have an original in the house, and I'm looking at, you know, they're very, very simple, you know.
Yes.
Uncomfortable, nice,
but.
Well, you know, I think their attitude was you should be out in the field working and not sitting at a dining table, right?
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
You're lucky that chair has a back on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I bring a mix of Windsor and ladder back chairs there.
Okay. Well, cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I didn't know that about the Shaker. I have to go back and revisit my history. I've only been to one Shaker village, and that's all they had were their standard chairs that they had, the Shaker. They're not ladder backs, but they kind of look like, the standard.
Yeah, they're it's a ladder back.
It's a ladder version.
Yeah, they're ladder backs, and they built tens and tens of thousands of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a straight up and down 90 degree ladder back.
Some of them canted back about 5 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, to give you a tiny bit. And then they actually invented this little swivel mechanism that they would build into the bottom of the rear legs so you could rock on it. Actually hollow out the bottom of the leg and put like a ball in there on a leather pole. So you could actually sit back and rock on it without damaging the chair too much.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. They're pretty inventive people, you know.
I know. I love their casework and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I took one look at their chairs, and no, not for me. But yeah, I might need to revisit.
Yeah.
So tell us about Mystic Seaport Museum. What are you doing there?
Yeah. So it's they do have a wood, you know, kind of an artisan show. That's there. It's very, very small. You know, I want to say there are 6 or 7 of us there, you know, showing goods. And two of them were model ship builders, and one of them was a carver who did excellent work, you know. So it's really, really small. But the museum is built on an old shipbuilding area in Mystic, and you know, the Connecticut coast, this whole coast going up north of Boston, you know, it was a big whaling and shipping area.
Yeah.
And they built a ton of boats, sailing vessels and stuff. And so they're able to get the land and recreate essentially a whaling village, shipping village. And, you know, so they have a bunch of the buildings that are, you know, furnished with originals. But the big thing is that they work on and they build big boats and they maintain them. And so they have their own, you know, permanent employees, the shipwrights. Uh-huh. So they own the a ship called the Morgan, which is a 3-masted schooner. It's the last whaling boat that was ever built.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's in there in the harbor, and you can go and walk around the boat, you know, and and they have a couple of them that are there, you know. When the Mayflower 2 was being built, a lot of that work was done there. Wow. You know, and they have everything, you know, recreated there, from how they made the ropes to, you know, how they were making the barrels to, you know, fixing all the tenders, you know, that all the side boats that went with that stuff. So they have a huge amount of knowledge on boat building, and it's all there, and it's always good to work with them. So they had this past year, they had a big exhibition called Away with Wood, and they wanted to showcase their shipwrights. So in their main exhibition building, they set up the main corridor where they had these tenders, and the shipwrights were working inside, repairing and replacing all the decking and the all the ribbing, you could walk up on a platform all the way around and talk to these guys while they were working, and you could see and look down over everything that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then on one of the sidewalls, they had some people come in and give complimentary, you know, types of woodworking. So they had a carver that was coming in, you know, carving the bow heads and different signs and stuff like that. And they had a cooper who was coming in doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I came in, you know, and I was there for 3 or 4 days just building a chair,
yeah,
you know, or at least really making parts, because you're talking to people all the time. So it was really more of a presentation on how things were made back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I actually brought in log and split it right there and made all the parts I needed, and brought in a steamer and steam bent all the pieces and you know, drilling holes and reaming and built Windsors.
Yeah.
Versus the ladder backs. It's really good. You know, they provide a huge service in, you know, and how things were done, and you know, supporting the artistry and things that were going on.
Yeah.
And so it's good to support that organization. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you always post about it. Looks like a fun time. So have you learned anything from the shipwright saying, hey, I could apply that to chair building?
Oh yeah. These guys, as you look at it, especially, you know, and you look at a lot of the more contemporary chairs with all these curves, these guys know curves, you know, and they know how to fair a curve, and they know how to bend wood. You know, their steam box setup is exactly the same as mine, you know? So they're, you know, except they're bending things that are like 14 feet long.
Right.
You know, I'm not, you know, but, they're bending wood, they're playing, you know, it's in place. They're hand planing it down. They're fairing it with hand tools. You know, so out of these big boats, they're fairing them down with a hand tool, you know, with hand planes and spoke shaves and things. And
it's the only way you can make that stuff fit.
Yeah. And so to watch them work there, you know, and then, you know, we got into all kinds of conversations on how we built things and put them together. And, you know, they're highly attuned to green woodworking and moisture content. And, you know, they actually build it so that they want their boats in the water so that the wood actually stays wet and expanded.
Yeah.
Keeps the joints tight.
Keeps the joints tight. Exactly the opposite of what I want to have happen.
Right.
For the same reason.
Yes. You know?
And
well, it's a Cooper's buckets. If you don't keep your buckets wet, you know, if it's designed to be a wet bucket and you don't keep it wet, it'll leak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. So any tools that you saw them use, just said, I need one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yes and no. You know, that surprisingly they're using the same tools that I already have. You know?
Yeah.
Some, you know, it's really, really not, you know, any different.
I guess that's good.
Yeah, the correlations are correlations are the same across the.
Of course, it might go the opposite way. They might see something that you're using. Hey, yeah, I could use.
Yeah, yeah. So it's it's nice because I, you know, became friends with some of those guys, and they're just good, hardworking guys, and you know, they want to make beautiful boats. You know, it's all they want to do. So it's and the boats they work on are big and they're huge and they sail them. You know,
yeah.
So they actually go out and they sail these 3-masted boats. You know, so
yeah, we have one here in Galveston, a sailing. It's my understanding you have to be a volunteer for like about 5 years before you ever qualify to actually go out when they sell it, which is only a few times a year. So.
Yeah,
but it's open for tourists to go and look at. It's pretty impressive to see that. But I imagine in your neck of the woods, it's probably twice the size of what we have.
Yeah. It's as I say, they have several of them. They have their own docks.
Yeah.
It's really impressive, and they do a fabulous job, you know, educating the public on what happened and what was going on at the time.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Well, let's move along to some of your reproduction work. I've seen a lot of posts, I guess, you doing some of the commercial customers you have about doing some work there, and it's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's I had a couple of people approach me. You know, it's building, you know, still limited ranges. I'm not building hundreds. Well, one case, I'm building 100 at a time.
Yeah.
You know, tiny stools. You know, they're tiny. They're 9x12x8x, you know, and 8 inches high or something. But they use them for demonstration for weaving. You know, and they just need the parts made. You know, and set up. I don't want to go to China for them, right?
So, right.
You know, it's whipping out hundreds and hundreds of parts. And I have another woman who Carolyn McKenzie, you know, who builds beautiful stools. So they're covered with leather and meant for ottomans and benches and things like that. And I build the bases.
Oh, okay, and, cool.
And you know, so it's pretty simple, but it's like I need 30 of these. You know,
wow.
So you know, it's they want them as a rustic look. It's pretty much standard Windsor construction. You know, they're made to look like they were made by hand to go along with the rough cowhide and stuff that she's using. And she does beautiful, beautiful work.
Yeah.
And so I said I make an awful lot of bases for her. And generally I'm making, you know, I give her the list. So it's like, well, your optimum number, you know, to get the most out of the materials that you're buying is this. you know, build 12 of these and 8 of these and, you know, and 10 of these. And so I'm generally building, you know, on average, maybe 10 of a style at one time. I'll just whip them out all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the production work is nice. It's, you know, especially in this pandemic year, it's kept the shop afloat.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. You know, and that's half the battle, you know, and running the shop is keeping stuff flowing through here. So.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting too, because I've always wanted to see how some of those more upholstered chairs are actually put together. I've watched a couple of videos and stuff like that, and it's kind of interesting to see the bones of these chairs and say, interesting.
yeah, the bones are pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, and it's you still got to have good joinery.
Yeah.
Right. It's all about having good joinery. Well,
what is that? I think Netflix, just a recommendation out there if people aren't aware of it. Netflix has a series called, I think it's called The Repair Shop. And it's a series out of England where they bring in stuff and they, you know, bring it back to its former glories. And they have a lot of artisans that, you know, are specific to one particular craft. And one of those artisans is this lady that does upholstery work. And She does some amazing stuff on that show. And yeah, you get to see the bones of the chair and, you know, how they're putting together the springs and, you know, all the horsehair and all of that kind of stuff. And it's kind of interesting. There is some woodworking involved. They have a woodworker there too that does some stuff. I think the guy that, you know, it's one of those pseudo reality TV shows, and the guy that runs it kind of does a lot, some woodworking. So I don't know how much, but they do have a woodworker on staff that does repair stuff. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. So if you're looking for something to watch,
fascinating stuff.
Yeah. If you're looking for something to watch on Netflix, I recommend that. So, but getting back to you. So what's next for you? What you got going on?
I think it's more of the same. I think I'd like to nail down some more ladder back and Windsor designs, you know, a little bit along the, you know, some of these more esoteric things, you know, like I just built this high sack back.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a guy in Connecticut, E.B. Tracy from the 1700s, long line of chair makers. And he made these high sack back Windsor sack backs. And guy said, that's an awfully cool looking chair. I'm going to make one. So I made one, and it's everybody loved it. And looks like it'll be a nice chair for production work. Hmm. But I think having some more, you know, contemporary versions of the Windsors and the ladder backs kind of coming through will be nice. Something I can kind of call my own design, and then, you know, continue to teach and pass the craft on. You know, I think it's some lost art in some of this, and it ought to be shared.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I agree with you, and I love some of your designs, especially intrigued of what contemporary Windsor. I don't know if you heard some of our last episodes, but I've been preaching this mantis chair that Curtis Buchanan has, and I need some plans for that.
Yeah, and, I've seen that chair.
Yeah. Oh, well, great. Yep. Have you sat in it?
Yep.
How is it? As comfy as it looks?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty comfy. It's pretty wild. You look at it, and it's, that's pretty out there, Curtis. That's unlike you.
Yeah.
but it's a beautiful chair. And I know Andy, do you know Andy Jack?
I don't know him personally, but I know
Andy. Andy's a great chair maker. He's a young guy, you know, I was saying he's his mid-30s or something, you know, but he apprenticed with Curtis for a while, and his claim was that he carved those.
So, okay.
Yeah. He carved those seats on the Manus chairs for, but it's a funky Windsor.
Okay. Well, get ready, listeners. Andy Jack coming up on the podcast.
Yeah. He's a good guy. He lives right up the road too.
Okay.
So he spent a lot of time down there with Curtis, and his wife's family owns a big dairy farm out this way. And so he's out there, you know, living in the country and building chairs.
Well, you are closing out our trifecta of chair making podcast, but I'm sure there'll be a upcoming trifecta shortly, and we can't get Andy Jack on there. So that would be fantastic.
Sounds good. Yep.
Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choice. So,
all right. What do you got, guys?
I'm drinking Galveston Island Brewery. Yes, I did see that they have curbside delivery, so I'm Mr. Curbside. So nice. I'm drinking their Blue Bridge Hoppy Amber Ale. It's exactly what it says. Well, yeah, the Blue Bridge is a landmark around here, but it's an Amber Ale that's quite hoppy, and it's pretty good.
Nice.
So, Sean, what are you drinking?
So I went to my local Kroger, nothing fancy, to pick up anything, but caught my eye of something I hadn't had before, a Sam Adams offering called, you got to say it with a Boston accent, Wicked Easy. Wicked Easy.
Wicked Easy.
Yeah, it's a light and hazy lager. I didn't pour it into anything to see the haze, but it is a light and fairly lightly flavorful lager.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in below 5% alcohol, it's just a nice, easy drinker.
Yep. Well, cool.
Sounds like it might be worth a shot.
Yeah, it's not bad, you know, and probably available everywhere. Kroger has it. So check your local grocer and see. Mark, what do you got there?
Well, I am drinking Hazy Little Thing yet again, but I might have to try that Sam Adams for the next one.
Yeah, it's really super palatable. It's not like doesn't hit you heavy with anything, which is kind of nice, but it's got a good little easy flavor to it. Well, so does Hazy Little Thing, though. That's a
beer. It's a good beer.
Good offer.
Cool. So, David.
Nice. Well, you guys are going to have to come here to have what I'm having, because there's a brewery half mile down the road, a legitimate brewery. And,
so, wait a minute. You got Trout, ski slope, and half a mile from your house is a brewery.
Yes.
But he's got bears wandering through his yard, too. So,
yeah, I do. I have bears.
It's exciting. Lots of different.
Okay, yep. Okay.
Yeah, and I have Legitimus's Chelsen Stout.
Chelsen?
Which is there. Yeah, Chelsen Stout. So they call it an American Stout. It's a really wonderful little drinking, not too heavy, not too light. And I think it's only got 5% alcohol or something. It's fairly light.
Mm-hmm.
And but a wonderful wonderful standby for me.
Well, fantastic.
Nice.
Well, great. Well, David, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
So my website is daviddouyardchairmaker.com, and that's D-O-U-Y-A-R-D. And then on Instagram, it's ddouyardchairmaker.com. It's for ddouyardchairmaker. Forget.
Exactly.
Yeah, not .com.
Yeah.
So, Mark, where can folks find you?
Well, I'm at plate11.com and am at Mark Builds It on Instagram and Plate 11 Woodworking on YouTube. How about you, Sean?
I am SeanW78 on most every place you can find me. Find me there. Kyle, how about you?
You can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram. And I also have a YouTube channel at Kyle Barton if you want to see any of my titillating videos. And remember, they're for content, not for entertainment. You can go visit me there and join my other 43 great supporters.
I was just going to ask how many.
Well, since I never promote it, and it's mainly the only time I do promote it is the instructions on my jigs. Because that's where I have all my instructional videos at. You know, I do post those on Instagram on IGTV, but it gets a lot more views over there than it does on YouTube. I go, you know, since Mark's promoting his YouTube channel, which is much more popular than mine, I might as well start something, you know.
Yes, Kyle, yeah. It's twice as popular as yours, and that's not saying much. So.
But hey, if you've got 42 subscribers and 10 people watched your video just posted yesterday, so a hot diggity, you're on a roll.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I know at least one of those was my wife's. Anyway.
And one of them was me.
My wife is so sick and tired of my videos by the time I upload them, she would never go to watch one.
Yeah.
She sees me editing them for hours.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to get them on to get them to like it, you know, so you get that one more like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what my wife said. She goes, maybe I should have liked your video. I go, yeah, maybe you should have. Well, with that fun, that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of choice. Just search for The Modern Glaciation, and while you're there, please leave us a review.
Yeah, and thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. The best thing you can do, though, is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.